Welcome to the Ethics Experts, where we're elevating ethics and compliance and HR to the strategic lever it's supposed to be.
You know, Nick, it's funny, as I've been connecting with people over the past week or two, I've started to say that asking how people are and checking in with people has taken on a new meaning. And when you say to people, how are you? And you think about Maslow, I've spent a lot talking about Maslow's hierarchy recently. And over the past several years, or most of my career, I've spent so much time focusing on self-actualization and fulfillment and reaching our potential and doing things that we want to do and getting challenges up there and out of the way. And now, now it's about basic needs. Now it's, do you have food? Can you get food? Do you have toilet paper? Do you have enough tissues in your house? Do you have a place to live? Is there someone in your house that's sick? And if that person is sick, are you able to care for them? And can you quarantine everybody else away from them? And so when we ask people now, how are you? It is such a loaded question. And I think the first question is, are you healthy? Does everybody that you love have their basic needs met? Is everybody alive? I mean, can you imagine ever asking that question to people?
Yeah. There's something interesting in what you're talking about, because we live on higher levels on that pyramid, right? Like 2 months ago, we were all living way higher on that pyramid. Our basic needs were never questioned. A question of whether or not you're going to get toilet paper was never really in anybody's mind. And so we asked the question, oh, how are you doing? And it's a very sort of artificial question, kind of to your point. And now, because we're living closer to that base and those things that we took for granted aren't really there, it feels like when we ask that question, there's some more authenticity behind it.
You're right. I mean, it's a great point. When I ask people now, how are you doing? I am actually asking people, maybe in the softest way, is your family safe? Is there anyone that you love that is on a ventilator, God forbid? Is there anyone in your home that is ill? Or are you waiting for a food slot that's been canceled 3 times? And I don't know. I'm in my 20s. I don't know about you, but
I'm in my early 20s too.
Yeah. I never thought I would be having these kinds of conversations in my whole lifetime. It's not something I would have ever imagined.
Well, we've been talking about this a lot. My brother and I were co-CEOs of Compliance Line. And so we've had to step up in different ways, and our team has stepped up in a lot of different ways to continue to like serve our clients. But the point is, what I think we found is that this whole thing is way more fragile than I think we have ever thought.
It's way more fragile than we ever thought. We feel as though we've all hit rock bottom. We are merely 3 weeks into it. All of the data that we should trust shows that we have not even yet hit the peak.
Yeah, I mean, we're just getting started. We're really just getting started on this ramp up. And there's I don't want to call it a false sense of security when everyone is so sort of insecure right now with respect to our whole sort of world changing. But I think that a lot of folks think like, okay, well, you know, we're in coronavirus mode. And it's like, well, we've taken the first step on this journey. We don't know what the future holds. We don't know what it's going to look like in 3 weeks. Is the whole country going to be like what we were seeing in Italy, you know, a month ago? It's a different situation that, to your point, I don't think anybody thought we would see in our lifetimes, which is it's a scary place to be.
It is a scary, scary place to be. And what's interesting is that some of the concepts that have been touted by people in our space and in the space where I play for years that some people have been hanging on to and some people have been proponents of are suddenly emergencies. And so, you know, one of the things I think about that's tactical is remote work. And, you know, I giggle, but not in a funny way, about a talk that I had the opportunity to present in October of 2019. And I spoke in front of a large group of people about remote work and how important I believed it was going to be in the next 5 years. And I shared a whole bunch of statistics and facts and figures and why I thought it would be important for people to really start to think about it and get on board. Little did I know that 6 months later, it wasn't even going to be an option for people. And it's interesting for me to think about people that wouldn't have even listened to such a talk or shown up or would have just, you know, left it off at the time, where now they're forced to figure out how to run a business that way. Or where we talk about leadership with compassion, or how people need to understand how to deliver news with compassion or share things, because you're in an environment right now where the unemployment statistics are growing exponentially.
Right.
And so we're now in a world where things like candor, courage, and care, which is my trademark that I've been working on and talking about for 2 years, it's not just fluff anymore. Now, this is where the women and men are going to stand out from the girls and the boys. And we talk about, you know, which businesses will be in business. We're talking about who's going to be alive. We're talking about colleagues and our friends are going to lose people that they love. It's way beyond businesses succeeding. It's a different environment. It's terrifying.
It's I think you bring up an interesting point. You're talking about how a lot of this stuff that people would think was fluff 6 months ago is now some of the most important conversations that we need to be having. And whether you want to talk about it from a compassion standpoint or a kindness standpoint or an empathy standpoint or a mental health standpoint, to the extent that we are in a knowledge work environment, a knowledge work economy where the assets are people, they're not machines, these things that we're talking about end up being the lubricant in those machines. In a lot of our plans for emergencies, when we're thinking about what assets need to be in place and what do we need to do to react to an emergency, I found many of those plans and policies and thought experiments from a risk mitigation perspective lacking on the human element and how we account for, well, how are the people going to feel in the midst of this? And I think this is really bringing that to the surface, this you know, crisis that we're in.
I would agree with you. I think that is why. What's interesting is my business has had a very interesting change even over the past 4 weeks. For about two to three weeks, my business took a very, very big hit, because most of what I do is I run, you know, large programs or small intimate programs, but I show up in organizations and I help run offsites for executive leadership teams to help them with, as I say, anything that starts with a C, culture, communication, or conflict, and helping them to be more efficient and effective with their organization, but putting people-focused leadership at the forefront of the workplace. And I'm usually a pretty booked person. And so imagine that a calendar that was booked to the gills with me showing up on site, leading organizations through these processes Monday through Friday. Of course, all of my meetings and sessions were promptly canceled from March.
Right. To June. My gosh.
It was, I mean, terrifying. absolutely terrifying. And so, and it all happened, Nick, in a period of approximately 9 business days. And not in about 9 business days, I watched my whole second to third quarter go to zero.
Wow.
And I was sick to my stomach.
What was that like? What did that feel like?
Terror and heartbreak, and that millions of us have experienced. And
right.
In the past week and a half, the 2 weeks that followed, what has surged for me and has almost taken the place is, I think, what you just referred to, that in so much of the work that had taken place prior to this, that human element was missing. And we now have a whole country of people sitting in our homes on Zoom, trying to create makeshift offices, sometimes with fake backgrounds on the moon or on the beach, wherever we might be, and realizing that this connection, understanding, empathy, human touch piece is so urgently critical that I'm not standing in organizations and leading offsites or helping leadership teams manage through culture anymore. I'm now suddenly booked to the gills, leading virtual sessions, helping teams inject, re-inject, or figure out how to do this now from our screens.
Right. It's, for people who haven't been an entrepreneur before, I just want to kind of revisit what that kind of up and down must have felt like for you over those 9 days when that calendar got evaporated. Because that packed calendar is not what you have on, month one of starting your own business or starting your own practice like you've done. To get to that point, that took a lot of effort to get that train moving. And to see that stuff evaporate before your eyes, I just imagine was brutal. But again, kudos to you for being able to pivot. And kudos for the leaders that know of you to recognize the need for your services, maybe now more than ever. And, you now can kind of apply your techniques and your skill set in a more virtual way in this new environment that we're all trying to figure out,
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. And, we are all struggling. I think that one of my gifts perhaps is that, and I do attribute it to my beautiful mom, is that she taught myself and my brother to see the bright side of absolutely everything. I don't know how she did it, but there was always something good to come of everything. And
right.
I don't see a lot of good in this coronavirus, I have to tell you, but if there are a few positives or bright sides here, it is that the coronavirus is teaching all of us that we are all the same. It is undeniably the great equalizer. It does not matter where you live or what you do or what color your skin is or how much money you have. Every one of us can get the coronavirus, and no one is safe from it. And it is amazing to me to watch everyone come together here and to watch celebrities talk about it and to watch people we admire, there's many people I don't admire talking about it. But you're not safe from it. And so suddenly, for the first time, perhaps, our whole country is coming together and we're all in something together. And my heart is going out to every entrepreneur and every business person whose business is collapsing.
Right.
The feeling that I had, and Nick, I still have it. I have I have had a very successful business, and I've been so fortunate with Assemble HR and the organizations I've had the opportunity to work with. But my business will not be as successful this year because my business is undoubtedly connected to the success of my clients. And
right.
Many of my clients are going to suffer, and as a result, that will impact my business. But pivoting right now is absolutely the answer. And the feeling I had in those 9 days and still have, you know, at a lesser level is fear. It was fear of all the work I did to get to a certain place and having to start again and having to start in an environment where nobody has any money. No one has money to spend, and the work that I do is specialized and maybe seen as
right.
non-essential. The word essential is such a scary word right now. And who is essential other than a medical care worker, someone that's saving lives? I mean, it is terrifying.
Yeah, it is terrifying. I mean, there's so much packed into what you just said. You know, we in the West have this very sort of individualistic culture and mentality where it's kind of us against the world. And I think, to your point, this has shown that, you know, we're all in this together. The level of interdependency between each of our lives is a lot higher than I think we would have estimated it to be, you know, again, 6, 3 months ago, whatever. And that great leveler leading to this essential nature of things allows for us to kind of open our eyes to the people that really keep things moving. And we did a podcast on this the other day, and we were just talking about how, you know, a lot of these so-called menial workers are the people that are actually the people in the foxholes with the guns, you know, with the bullets, you know, buzzing over their heads. They're the ones who are keeping this war going. And the folks that, you know, maybe were looked down upon by some people, you know, a few months ago are now the people who are our heroes. And I think to the last point you made about, you know, who's essential, what's essential, how does your service, which may not have been viewed as essential, how does that change in the context of this? And what I'm seeing is that, look, you're right. I mean, if a company is trying to keep their lights on, that's kind of a worst case scenario, and they're going to be making sort of some tough decisions. But what I'm sort of finding is that as companies are starting to take a bit of a breath and saying like, okay, this is going to be our new normal for a little bit, and they're adjusting to the fact that this could go on for several months, and we're adjusting to this sort of remote work and the challenges that moms are having because they have to be, you know, stay-at-home mom and work mom and school teacher kind of all rolled into one, it leaves a lot of opportunity for folks like you to come in and talk about, you know, that candor, courage, and care, or to talk about culture and communication and how do we deal with conflict and so forth. So I just commend you for, you know, your attitude. You really, I know you've been through a hard kind of couple of weeks, but your positivity is really shining through. And I think that is what we need from leaders like you as we kind of trudge our path through this new frontier, you know?
I appreciate that so much. And I think we all need messages from each other. There are people that inspire me. And all I ever hope to do is maybe help more person who will then inspire another person. And I'm curious, Nick, how is this impacting you and your business?
So it's kind of an interesting question. So on the one hand, we have an essential business. We have, and it's actually essential. Okay. So we serve a lot of healthcare organizations. So we provide whistleblower hotlines. We serve a lot of nursing homes as well. In those cases, we're sometimes like 911 for nursing homes. So that population is obviously super susceptible to all this stuff. So we've seen a huge surge in volume. And because of the specialized nature of our solutions, we've also been able to help out some organizations and municipalities and stuff like that with, you know, specialized hotlines to maintain employee relations through this process, right? You know, HR people are getting inundated with hundreds of emails a day asking the same question, or people are concerned about this or that. So we can set up a specialized hotline for them to help them, you know, communicate better and, you know, clear the path for them to focus on the real strategic things that they need to cover, you know, right now. So on that side, it's been a positive. What's really been the biggest thing that I've been battling against and my brother has been battling against is the people piece, which is some of the stuff that you just alluded to. And what I'm talking about is while we sent all of our non-essential people, you know, to work from home, those who can work remotely are doing so. We've cut down the risk of, you know, contagion within our office, you know, by, you know, depending on how you do the math, 78 to like 83%. There's still people that are coming here every single day who are answering those phones from the nursing home and answering those phones, answering those calls from nurses to who are voicing their concerns about X, Y, or Z, who are trying to do our part to kind of support the people that are on those front lines. And they're humans. I mean, they're scared themselves. They're worried about all these other things. So we're taking steps, obviously, to do our best to communicate a lot and to, you know, disinfect and space people out and things like that. But that's probably the biggest challenge that we faced over the last couple of weeks is battling the fear, trying to provide good information for folks, and trying to provide, you know, essentially the safety for us to continue to fight alongside the people that we're trying to support.
What's interesting is one of the more urgently sought after programs that I'm now offering that I can't book fast enough. We're getting a lot of calls for is a program I put together 2 weekends ago called Change Leadership in Our New Normal. In the program, we go through the Bridges Change Curve, and it starts with an ending, and it goes to the neutral, and it goes to a new beginning. And we talk about the emotions that people feel in each of those stages. And the key point in that particular model is that we don't think about or focus on the change, because the change isn't something that people can control, nor is it something that we asked for. What we focus on is the transition, because the transition is something that happens inside of people. It's what happens in our minds and in our own mentality and our emotions. And every single person experiences transition in a different way at a different pace. And so,
right.
Your transition and mine for the same change could be very different. And in the program that I'm offering, we talk about what leaders need to provide to their people and their teams and their families and their loved ones in each stage. And when you talk to me about what your customers and what people need in the nursing homes during that time, particularly on those calls, the answer in stage one, which is the ending of something that we know, the ending of something where we are comfortable, which creates confusion and sadness and depression,
right,
and panic and fear, are two things. What they need from you and what we all need from everyone around us is empathy and so much communication. And empathy is really tricky. Many people confuse empathy with sympathy. Sympathy.
Yeah, let's pick that apart, please.
Yeah, so sympathy is, I feel bad for you. I feel bad for the situation you're in. So if I hear that you lost your favorite jacket, that really cool red jacket you're wearing, and if you tell me how much you love that jacket and you tell me the whole story and that you lost it, and I feel really bad for you, that's sympathy. Empathy, which is a much, much deeper and trickier emotion that most people don't really have or have practice at, is the ability to feel what another person is feeling. So I actually also feel sadness and loss about your jacket. I feel sad also personally that you have lost your jacket. And so empathy is the ability to put yourself in someone else's shoes. And this is where leaders need tremendous upskilling in delivering news or just simply listening to what people are going through. Empathy is imagining and doing everything we can to put ourselves in someone else's circumstance and what those feelings feel like. And the best leaders, those with the most empathy, are conveying to others that they're right there with them in that moment.
Even if they don't necessarily feel that themselves, they almost can conjure it up by stepping so deeply into the shoes of the person that they're connecting with.
Yeah. So there's a leader I work with right now. I know an employee that has shared with this leader some really, really tough personal news. And the leader's response was, "Ah, that sucks." That's a great example of no empathy.
So, yeah, what would you even call that?
That's a great example of barely sympathy.
Got it.
And so leaders need so much training, learning, experience, and exposure to empathy right now. And then in terms of communication, what we need as people is so much information. That is how we gain control. And so communication comes in so many forms right now during this phase, which is the ending phase, the panic phase, the confusion phase. And so hearing from people that we know, hearing from our leaders, our friends, this is why we are watching the news and reading updates on our phones, and we can't get enough because we want expectations. We want data. We want to know anything that anyone can tell us. This is why companies should be reaching out to their employees to let them know anything they can, because in the absence of information, we start filling in our assumptions, and that's where come in. So if you haven't heard from your company, maybe you worry if you're going to get laid off. If you haven't heard from your family member, maybe you worry they're in the hospital. If you haven't heard from Amazon, if you haven't seen a confirmation email from Amazon, maybe you worry that your food isn't coming. And so these are great examples of how critical proactive communication is right now. And so these are some of the things that I've been covering in my change leadership session right now that's so pertinent to what's going on in our world, but it sounds like it's probably applicable to what's happening with your group and certainly with the nursing homes, because the care of elderly is so important.
I mean, as you talked about the sort of pillars of this course or of this sort of thought path, I just can't imagine where it doesn't apply. And I think it's super important. I mean, let me ask you this. Why do you think it's so hard for people to get that empathy thing right? And do you see certain groups do it worse than others? Like, I would bet, I'll just go ahead and say it. Like, I bet it's harder for men in general to be empathetic. And I'm just wondering, you know, why do you think that is? In general or specifically?
You know, I've seen some men be incredibly empathic. I think it just depends on certain people. And it also depends on which schools of thought you subscribe to. If you subscribe to the Strength Finder school of thought, they would tell you, that school of thought would tell you that empathy is a natural talent that you're born with or not. And we all have the same 34 themes of strength as human beings. And for some people, it's just naturally stronger than others. That school of thought would tell you that it can't be taught. It can only be developed more strongly than others. I believe that the more we talk about it and the more people understand what it is, or people are given examples or can think of times when others empathized with them and say, that's what it was. Because once you've experienced a moment of empathy,
you know, from someone else.
Yeah, you know the difference.
Yeah. So, okay, so that's good. But why is it so hard? I mean, you know, this is maybe going to sound stupid, so buckle up. But there's a certain like emotional guard that needs to be let down for that connection to be had and those emotions to be felt. And why is it so hard for people to get there? I mean, do you feel like, I mean, it doesn't sound like you think the Strength Finder model is necessarily correct. It sounds like you think anybody can sort of develop this, whether you're sort of quote unquote born with it or not. Is that right or no?
Well, actually, I think you just answered it the way that you asked the question. I believe the reason it's so hard is because there is a lot more work to do for human beings to show empathy than to show sympathy. If I have things to do.
Got it.
If I have to get through my day and you just broke up with your boyfriend, I want to be a very sensitive person to you.
Mm-hmm.
If I show you sympathy, I'm gonna gain points as a sensitive person by telling you, I am really sorry that happened, and showing you a lot of care. And then I can essentially hang up and move on with my day.
Right.
If I am incredibly empathic, then I will actually take that on with you. I'm gonna expend far more emotional capital. If I get into that emotional experience with you, it's going to cost me more. It won't just be that phone call.
I think that's really well put. It takes more to do it. And I wonder if, like, self-centeredness goes up, the difficulty to be truly empathetic also rises.
Well, if you think about this moment in time, I think it's also fair that everyone is in survival mode.
Right.
We are all doing our best to survive and be strong and take care of self and take care of those around us. And so particularly those that are in leadership roles of any kind, either in business or in family or in neighborhood or in community, to be asked to take on more in any way. Right? But most particularly emotionally, that's a lot. And so if you are not naturally empathic already, think of what that weight could be. So from in my mind, people that are already highly empathic individuals, in subscribing to the Gallup school of thought, which I do believe, they're right now flourishing because this is what they naturally do. And people are flocking their way because they just do feel with others. It's a way that they communicate and connect. But for those to whom it doesn't come as naturally, to have to dig that much deeper and take on other people's emotions while in survival mode, while leading through crisis, it's a big ask. So in those situations, I think those leaders need to spend even more time doubling down on communication.
To kind of compensate for the difficulty in providing the empathy?
That's right. So for those leaders, it's about thinking about how to be sympathetic, about acknowledging emotions that other people are experiencing and saying them out loud. How hard it must be that your XYZ person isn't feeling well and asking out loud what people need. It's about making sure every connection starts with people and not business. And I've been saying all the time, people first, business second. Anybody who is starting a conversation,
100%.
Anyone who's talking business first is making a big mistake right now. Anybody, it doesn't matter what business you're in. And if you think you're communicating, no matter who you are or what you do, we're not doing it enough. We can't possibly communicate enough. Just double whatever we're doing, we should double it.
That's really great advice. You know, as you were kind of, before you got into the difficulty, and you talked about how we're in survival mode, and when you're in survival mode and you're just trying to keep your own head above water, you're focused on, you know, not drowning yourself. It's hard to look around you on who needs the life, you know, vest or whatever. I was just thinking what an opportunity it is for leaders to make that sort of empathetic impact and be there for their people and so forth. But you're right. There's like a commensurate, you know, the need is sort of exploded. The impact that can be had from this stuff has exploded, but there's sort of a commensurate explosion of, you know, crisis that is also sapping or, you know, taking attention away from the application on the other side where that huge impact could be had, you know?
No doubt.
So, you know, the whole purpose of this podcast is really to help elevate ethics and compliance, or help elevate HR from this check the box, from this cost center way of thinking that a lot of companies apply to these functions that, in my mind, are the most underutilized assets in organizations, particularly, again, in our knowledge work economy where the people are the assets. You've talked about a lot over the last, you know, few minutes as we've been chatting, but for somebody that's just in the thick of it right now, who maybe is trapped, so to speak, in one of these organizations that is sort of dollar myopic, dollar first, profits over people type of company, what would you tell them? What advice would you give them, you know, today? And what advice would you give them sort of over the medium term on how they can help elevate and use this crisis as an opportunity to multiply their impact?
There is not a single person, unfortunately, in our country today that isn't touched by what is going on. Yesterday, I worked with a major organization that we all know, and I worked with the executive leadership team. And one of the executives said that he or she is now spending time deciding what obituaries would look like if he or she now needed to start working on them for executives in the organization.
And yikes.
That became part of the job. We are in an unprecedented moment where whatever business we are in has become so secondary. And everybody knows that without the people that work to support your business, you have not a business. And every business is in danger. And every person that makes your business run is in danger. And every one of those people has a story. And in the programs that I'm running right now, We are spending time asking people what is happening in their lives and letting people tell their story. And what has astounded me and broken me down is that I have yet to hear a person at any level, C-suite down, who isn't experiencing a crisis. Not one, not a single person. And so what organizations need to know now is that what we really are groups of people in crisis that are also trying to run businesses. That's what we are. We are not businesses. We are groups of people in crisis that are trying to run businesses. And if you think about it like that, if I told you, Nick, that your business building was on fire right now, would you get the people out of the building? Or would you tell everyone to stay in the building and keep working?
Well, you're asking the wrong guy. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I, of course, would get them out.
And so that's what we're dealing with today. That is how today is different from any other day before. You are talking about every business is essentially, metaphorically, a building that is actually on fire.
Right.
Are you going to let your people continue to sit at their computers in a fire, or are you going to first save their lives and then get back to business? And if you leave them in there on the fire, in the fire, you will unquestionably get your payback later. People will remember and always remember how they are treated in the toughest of times. This is where loyalty is earned. This is where people walk out and remember. This is the stuff that matters.
Yeah, I think that's really aptly put. The business is nothing more than a collection of people. And, you know, that's something I've been saying for a long time. It's just a bunch of people who show up at the same place every day pursuing some mission or some set of activities that are in pursuit of some purpose or whatever. But to your point, this whole situation has really underscored that and made that a reality. Because, like you said, we're just a bunch of people in crisis that are trying to run a business. The business isn't doing something. The logo on the door isn't doing something. There are people that are doing all those things. And those people, to your point again, are in this crisis mode and they're all affected by it. And there's this undercurrent of fear. And where's my rent going to come from? And am I going to get furloughed? And what am I going to do about my mom? And I haven't heard from my uncle. And all these thoughts that are in the back of everyone's head while they're trying to do these, while they're trying to do the business of whatever business they're doing. And something else you said that I really think is spot on is this is a time that people are going to remember. And something my brother and I have been saying is that character is revealed in times like this. It's not built. And the heart of a company is going to come out in these scenarios. Everyone has a really nice website and a really nice mission statement that has a lot of diversity on it. And we put people first. Those are really easy things to say. But I think when the chips are down, you see where people actually stand and you see what they're actually, what their hearts really are. And you're right, people are not going to forget. But I think in today's transparent culture, it's going to extend beyond the people in the four walls of the business from the way that they were treated. It's going to extend out to the people around them. And the people around them are going to remember how these organizations treated their loved ones or those people that they care about. And this, to your point, it's going to be this great separator. It's going to be a great separator of people. It's going to be a great separator of organizations. And I think those organizations where a heart is in the middle instead of a dollar sign are going to be the ones that are able to elevate out of this and provide that care and compassion to their organization and to the people relying on it.
It's never been more true. It's never been more true. Right. I think right now about certain companies, I think about my good friend Jonathan Hirsch, his company called Lamart. and his company could be in big trouble right now. And he doesn't care. He has just taken every resource that he has because he has a factory. And he could now be losing every dollar that they're going to make this year, but he has changed over his factory, which is not as big as the big fancy factories that you're seeing all over the news, and they're making gowns for medical workers.
Good for him. What a guy.
We'll all remember that. Everyone will remember that. That's heart in the middle of your company.
And you know, he's not doing it, but what's interesting is that people who are actually doing this stuff, they're not doing it for the PR angle. He's not, he's probably not bringing in cameras to say, you know, look at us and what we're doing. He's trying to actually make a difference. And that's what's kind of the beauty of all the stuff we're talking about, is that if it's real, it's rooted in authenticity. Like, you can maybe fake sympathy, but you can't fake empathy. You can't really fake having a heart like your friend has, because that takes a real sacrifice. And I think in today's culture, we're super tuned into this authenticity thing. And I think a lot of these things that, again, like we were saying earlier in the conversation, a lot of these things that were fluffy and soft and, you know, blah, 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 hugs and kisses type of things, I think we're starting to see, and this is really going to prove it, that these are the things that actually matter. And the hard stuff is easy, but the soft stuff is what's hard. And that's really what's going to separate people, because that's the stuff that's really real.
I don't think you could have made a more beautiful conclusive statement.
Oh, well, thank you.
That was absolutely beautiful. I'm so glad that you asked me to join you today. And this, I don't know about you, but this conversation really helped me, because, you know, these are days that are up for all of us.
Yeah. I was just going to say the same thing. I mean, I feel really lucky to have known you, or to have met you, and just so thankful that you came on and spent some time with us today. You know, I'm just trying to add some value to the mix. I'm trying to bring some different perspectives into the mix, and to have a thought leader like you come on, who's in the thick of it. You know, I feel like you're going through it with me, even though we don't really know each other that well. But just to, you know, talk to somebody who looks at the world the same way, and to, for you to have been so generous with your perspective and your insights, there's just so much that, like, we can take away with this. And I'm humbled that you spent the, you know, part of your afternoon with me. And I'm just really thankful, you know, for you, the impact that you're making, and for you joining us on the Ethics Experts.
Well, it was so well worth it, even the second time.
Second time's the charm.
Time to charm. No alarms went off. Nothing went on fire. So that's better. And I love what you're doing also. And good luck to you in your business. And certainly hope that anyone who has the opportunity to hear our talk gets value from it. And if it helps other people, that's really what I'm out there to do. And if there's anything else I can do to help you and your brother and other people that are involved with you in your business, I would love to be a part of that. And stay safe, stay healthy, stay inside, and stay connected.
Jill, how can people find you?
My God, I'm so darn findable. Although I'm always... So my website is hrassemble.com. And LinkedIn is probably the best place, and it's Jill Katz, K-A-T-Z.
All right, Jill. Well, thank you so much. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and we will see you soon.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Oh, my gosh, Jill. That was so fun.
That was great. Thank you so
much. That was awesome. You're a master, obviously. You do this all the time, but I appreciate... I just appreciate your heart. You really, I don't know. You're so passionate about this stuff. You're so authentic with it. And there's just a lot of feeling in what we're doing here together. And I just, I don't know. I appreciate you and what you're bringing to bear in the world right now. I think we need it more than ever, you know.
I think you're a pretty darn natural yourself.
Oh, well, thank you.
That was awesome.
That was a lot of fun. So I am going to get this published as soon as I can. It'll probably come out like middle of next week. I'll send you all the files and, you know, tag you and everything else. And, you know, you can share it around. And yeah, it might be interesting if we do like a joint webinar. That could be a cool thing. I'm just brainstorming, you know, but I love this framework that you do, that you're talking about, this empathy and communication, because it's so actionable. And I think I love how you kind of tied it down to like even people who are kind of like, you know, weak on the empathy scale, they can still provide that hug, so to speak, to folks by leaning into something that they're probably better at or something that's probably easier to execute on. And that's just over communicating. You know what I'm saying? Like you can do either one and be that effective leader. Regardless of how you're wired, if that skill finders thing is right, or regardless of whether you have time to sort of build it, if the Gallup side is right, you know?
There's always a way. You just have to want to.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Jill. This was really, I don't know, highlighted my day. I feel like energized. It gave me some good thoughts on how I can kind of try to be a better leader here for my people. Because, I mean, they're scared. I mean, they're absolutely scared about what's going on and what's coming. And you said it earlier that this thing's not going to peak for a while still. So we got a lot of storm coming.
Yeah.